and welcome to this week's lovely podcast. So who are we then?
We are Family Tree Talk, and you're Helen Tovey. You are the editor of Family Tree, and I'm going to still keep saying it, you're a Family Tree guru. And I am Nathan Ward, some fella that's trying to just do his Family Tree.
You're some fella who is doing his Family Tree and is doing very, very well. And I am definitely not a guru, as this week's episode will show all too clearly. So, first of all, you know what, Nathan? We've had some listeners.
Have we?
I know we have. Yeah.
That is the best.
And they're not just ordinary listeners, not that any listeners are ordinary. We love anybody who listens to the podcast. We're very grateful for people spending their time listening to it. But they're very, very special listeners because they've reached out to help you with your problem of Mary Ann Briggs and how you couldn't find it in the 1891 census. So can I just give them a shout out?
Please do. Please do.
Okay. So I love it when we get an international connection. We have Sharon from New Zealand, and she has found Mary Ann. So are you jealous?
Well, yeah, you know I am. I'm not jealous, actually. I'm happy because it's been a brick wall for me, hasn't it, for a few weeks. So this is good. Yeah.
And Jacqueline has also found Mary Ann.
Yeah. Nice.
Yeah. And Brian has also found Mary Ann.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm just embarrassed now.
I know. Well, I'm embarrassed, but I'm very grateful, but I'm embarrassed. I'm pleased for you because it's horrible having a hole on your family tree. I'm a little bit embarrassed that I wasn't able to help you, but I'm very pleased that other people have helped you. That's cool. And Brian is really helpful because he explains how he found Mary Ann. So we all have this problem. You're looking in a big record collection like the census. You can't find them. You feel sure they must be there somewhere. And usually they are, but they're disguised by a misspelt surname. It's like a classic error. So we had been looking for Mary Ann Briggs, and we had tried a few things, hadn't we? So what Brian did, he did a very sensible thing of, rather than just sticking on obsessing about Mary Ann, he looked for her daughter, Ada, with just the first name for Ada and with the date and place of birth for Ada, plus putting in Mary Ann as a mother and sibling Alice, again, not using any surnames. And he looked in the locality, I think, and he found them in exactly the right parish where we'd hoped them to be, in Thornton in Yorkshire. So it's that thing of just leaving out the surname, because the surname, as it turned out, was mistranscribed. It was the handwriting, I think it said Briggs, but it wasn't super clear, and it had been mistranscribed as Bags. But maybe I had the benefit of knowing it should have said Briggs, which is always very easy to be clever after the event once you kind of know something, isn't it? So anyway, thank you so much to everybody who got in touch. So we have a bit of a confession now, or I have a confession. So Nathan couldn't find Mary Ann in 1891. Me and Nathan had a massive session for probably about an hour, didn't we, of racking our brains trying to find Mary Ann. And we didn't manage to, but we thought it would still be helpful to share with you some of the things we tried, because then you can either try them out maybe with more success in your own family trees, or you can be shouting at your listening device and go, oh, Muppets, why are they doing that? They forgot to do this. And you can let us know what we forgot, and then we can share those tips in the future episode. So Nathan, can you remember what we did?
We did everything. Where did we start? I think we started looking at, I can't remember now. We looked at the locality, didn't we, to see if she had moved anywhere. So we found a reference to her living in
North Aurum, wasn't it?
North Aurum, yep. And then she was also living in Thornton. So we did a little bit of map searching, which is a first for me because I don't do locality. So we were just checking to see if she had moved away from the area, if it was far away. So I went on a map. Turns out it was like two villages away. So she was still in the same ballpark, but we didn't. The premise on that was, has she moved back with her family because obviously her husband's died, or, you know, has she gone back to her birth town? So maybe thinking we can shift the location. As it was, it didn't seem to make any difference.
I remember what our starting point was, Nathan. Do you remember what our starting point was? We thought, right, the 1891 census happens in the spring, and her husband had died in the November of the previous year. So only like 3 or 4, 5 months beforehand, wasn't it? And we found the address where the husband had died, and we also found that the informant on Mary Ann's husband's death certificate was her brother-in-law. So we were like, wait a minute, are the family all rallying around this poor young widow with her little kids?
That's correct. Yes, William Taylor. Yes, so he was witness, wasn't he, to the death? Because I've bought the death certificate of her husband. So yes, you're right. We looked at where he was living in case Marianne had moved in with her brother. That sent us down a rabbit hole where I wanted to just research William Taylor and find out about his life. So you kind of reminded me that we didn't need any rabbit holes continuously. And then we looked out for her other brother, who was slightly older, Job mm-hmm. Taylor. And again, he'd moved away. I found out so much more about him since then. No, we'll come back to that. So she wasn't living there with him or either brother or the parents. Yes.
Mm. And we did try wild cards, didn't we? So we tried searching for in the surname field when we were searching for Marianne. You were right, Nathan. You were really keen on searching for her with her children. And that was a really helpful train of thought. And we suspected there might be a problem with the spelling of the surname. So we did the wildcard thing of doing B asterisk S, didn't we? So that should really have picked up Marianne Baggs for us. And maybe it did. And maybe we were in too much of a hurry and we missed it. But we should have found what Brian found by doing that. But somehow we managed not to.
Yeah, so I think you've been too harsh on yourself. You actually gave me the solution to get to the right answer. We just didn't find it. And I do think it was me being too dismissive. I think I was just like in a flurry and just like looking at everything too quickly. But we did it on Marianne, didn't we? We didn't do it on the children.
Mm.
So we did Marianne with your, what do you call them, wild cards?
Yeah, wild cards.
With the surname with the asterisks. And obviously that didn't work with her. But clearly for some reason with the children, it did work. So close, so very close.
Should we just do a quick wildcard 101?
I think so, yeah, because I hadn't heard of this term until you mentioned it. So it's
yeah, there's something. Have I ever mentioned Sophie Kay before?
Once or twice, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, Sophie Kay is one of those super organised professional genealogists, and I've known about wildcards ever since I started family history. But I have to confess, I didn't habitually use them in my research until Sophie just expanded at length in them. About them in a research session, and after that I feel like these are a really, really useful tool. So what they are you can either use an asterisk or a question mark. There may be other wild cards you can use, but I don't know about them off the top of my head. I don't know about them at all, I don't think. Anyway, so it's an asterisk or a question mark. If you just wanted to replace one character in a name, it's normally a surname that you're playing around with, then you would just use the question mark. So let's say you weren't sure if their surname was going to be I'm going to make it up, Drew or Draw. And so then you could use a question mark in the place of the E or the A, and then the search results would return everything, any other character in that question mark slot. But let's say you wanted to search on multiple different characters. So we were looking for Briggs. But if you go B asterisk S, then we're going to come up with multiple things which start with a B and end with an S. So we could get Burgess, we could get Burrows, we could get Briggs, we could get Bags, we could get all sorts of things. And how I remember which one to use in which context, because I'm a visual person, I think you are as well, Nathan, is the asterisk has loads of little pointy bits pointing off it. And that reminds me, that's the one for loads of characters. Anyway, that's the end of wildcards, but they're really, really useful.
Yeah, clearly. I mean, I was too dismissive, wasn't I? Oh, I should have slowed us down and not got too excited. But that would have helped. That would have given us the answer, which is infuriating because we were so close. But anyway, thanks to the listeners who have solved it for me. I feel quite calm now. It's really nice, isn't it?
It's really good. And you're free to get on with something else.
Something else indeed. I mean, I've already created so many more. They're not rabbit holes really, but just little places for me to get lost in doing the search that we did. Like I said, I got obsessed with the brothers after that. So I want to go and research them a bit, but I shouldn't do. But I will do, but I shouldn't do.
No, I think it's okay.
Is it?
Yes. I think it's definitely okay. Because when we started out on our search, it's not a silly plan when you can't find somebody in their own household where they should be. Because imagine we're in a world where there's the workhouse. That's one option when you fall on hard times. Or there's your family. So obviously your family's going to be your preferred safety network. So when you're looking for family, potentially when they're, you know, when they migrate and then they return from wherever in the world and they come back home. Quite often I found them with my ancestors, they're living with other family members while they kind of settle down in the old country back in England again, for instance. So I found them there. One of them was a silly thing. It was one of my Teuton's great grandpas. I didn't find him for years. I think it was in the 1901 census, because I knew he was like an established middle-aged man, and I was just obsessed with the fact he'd be the head of a household, and I just didn't want to entertain the thought that he wouldn't be the head of the household. And so I just would dismiss loads of search options for him, because I just would only want to find him as a head of the household, which is such a silly preconception to have. And anyway, I found him living with family members because he'd just come back from South Africa and he didn't have anywhere to live. So it's silly, isn't it? So the family was a huge support to... So in the instance of Mary Ann, she's just recently widowed. She's got children. She's lost the breadwinner. It wasn't a silly train of thought we did, trying to seek out those family members. At the stage your tree was at, you knew about some of the family members and not others. But just imagine a future circumstance. The more family members you have there, the more you have an appreciation of their lived experience at that time. Those family members are part of their, like, maybe daily lives, or people they correspond with. They're important to them. When they die and they get a letter in the post from America saying they've died, it's sad news for them. We need to know about these people.
Yeah, definitely. Every reason,
practical and poetic.
Yeah, I've definitely seen it on quite a few of mine. I'm not necessarily with the sad story, but I've seen instances where the family, on the census, the family have moved in with the granddad who's now a widow. I don't know which side that's gone, whether it's like the granddad needed looking after and had a bigger house, or whether the family, the children had come on hard times and needed to move in with the father.
How I tell the difference, and it could be wrong, so anybody listening has a more concrete official way of finding out. So, you know, when you look on the census, if the older person was there, let's say the grandparent age person was there and listed as the head of the household, and everyone, let's say the son and daughter-in-law and all their children, twice of us, were listed below that, then my assumption would be that the older person was the person with the property or the bigger house, and they had kindly let the younger people come in to live with them, whether to help look after the older person, but it's still like the older person's kind of got the assets or the kind of the socioeconomic security or whatever. Whereas if you see instances and it's got the mum and dad and then it's got all the kids and then there's an older person, a grandparent listed at the bottom of the household, so below the kids, and they'll be listed as the relationship to head of household will be father or mother, depending on which one they are, then my kind of hunch is that that's an older person who has been taken under the wing of one of their children to look after them in their later life. What do you think about that?
I think that makes sense. But equally, I guess if it works out that the family move into the elder person's house, so the elder person still owns the house, it still isn't concrete that they're not necessarily needing care as opposed to looking after the children. I think it could go either way. So I don't really know how you'd officially find that one out. I've got a question about censuses anyway. This might be stupid, but because in my search for Mary Ann, and obviously her husband had died and she'd just had a child, one thought came into my head, like, what if she's in hospital? What happens to people that are in hospital during the census times?
So they would be recorded. So people in prisons got recorded, people at boarding schools, people in hospitals, people in workhouses. So they would all be recorded on the census and you can find them. They have slightly different paperwork because it's institution paperwork, I think. And sometimes when it's more sensitive situations, so I think this is the case with prisons, hospitals and workhouses, sometimes you're going to find them only listed with their initial. Yeah.
Okay.
So you'd be down as NW if you were in one of those situations. Because even our Victorian ancestors, I assume it's because they did it out of sensitivity to somebody's privacy, but maybe they just did it because they were only collecting the data for statistical purposes and they didn't feel it was important to record the whole family. Who knows?
Yeah.
Good question. Why did they only use initials in many institutions? But they didn't use use initials in schools. So it does make you feel like it is a privacy situation. If it's a boarding school, to get the whole name.
Right. Interesting. So it's not just like the sheer volume of people that are in there.
No.
So, you know, like, there's too many people in. They don't actually really live in this hospital.
Mm.
It just happens that today they are in the hospital. Mm. I don't know.
No, so I don't know what the proper reason is. We'll have to find this out. So this is one of those have to find this out for sure. My hunch is it was out of kind of privacy reasons, but that could be completely wrong. But you were only supposed to be recorded once in the census. So if you were in hospital, you shouldn't have been recorded at home. And we do all sometimes come across somebody who's recorded twice, which is kind of fun and kind of confusing, but can also be helpful because it helps to cross-check two family households. Yeah?
Yeah, that sounds terrifying. I don't like the idea of that at all.
Mm, yeah. Definitely only supposed to be once.
Yeah.
You also get people in military barracks. I found my great-grandpa in the 1911 census for England and Wales down in London. And I was completely confused by this because he was Scottish and my interpretation of him and all the other details I found about him was Scotland. And the only time I find him in England is in the 1911 census. He's born in Scotland. He goes to school in Scotland. He's leaves Scotland to go and work in South America. He comes back to Scotland. He serves in the First World War. He comes back to Scotland. He goes to South America. He works all around the world. He goes back to Scotland, apart from the 1911 census. And that was one of these things, you said it feels terrifying. I was like, is this really him? But it was him. And yeah, but it did take me, you know, just time to feel confident. I definitely had got the right person. They're always there to confuse us, aren't they, all these answers?
They are. I mean, that's quite terrifying. So much travelling about. Keeping a track of him must be quite hard work.
But it's fun, though, because you get, like, more often dots along his timeline, I guess, don't you?
Yeah, fine, good.
Boat rabbit holes.
Yeah, I'm just saying this in a bitter way because, obviously, it's putsy, putsy, putsy. Yeah, really hard to keep track of my relatives. Whatever.
But, you know, this guy, he was pretty amazing. So his family was all very much sterling for quite a few generations. And his mum was a domestic servant. So he wasn't like super salubrious background. You wouldn't have imagined he's going to live such an adventurous life. And the school leaving age in Scotland changed the year that he left school. So he either left school at 13 or 14 because it went up to 14 and his birthday was in the March. I'm like, so did he leave at 13 or 14? But anyway, yeah, he left just par for the course at that time. And then between then and the start of the First World War, then he had gone down to London as part of his work and he went to South America after that. But I wouldn't have known about that London chapter apart from the 1911. Yeah.
Right, cool.
So it made me think as well, maybe think about these First World War soldiers. So they break our hearts because they're teenagers sometimes who are serving at the First World War. But from my great-grandpa, he was a young man, but his perspective, by the time he serves in the First World War, if he's left school at 13 or 14, he might have just been like a boy, you know, called like a, you know, baker's boy or whatever. He wasn't a baker's boy. He got into accounting somehow. He must have just been really brainy at maths. That definitely didn't get passed on to me. But he would have felt like he'd been in the workplace for a very long time by the time the First World War starts out. He's going to feel more adult than maybe...
than we are probably now.
Yes, probably. Yes, yes. Much more responsible. Probably, that's true. God, yeah.
Speaking of the First World War, didn't we have somebody with a pledge?
We did. We had our first pledge, apart from us two.
Well, I'm not sure my pledges count anymore.
No, your pledges definitely count. So just to recap, in case anybody doesn't know what on earth they're talking about. So Nathan and I are partial to rabbit holes. We just have to admit, we just find them very, very fascinating. But we also know that we feel a bit more calm and a bit more constructive when we actually do some of the things on our family history to-do list. So we've started pledging to each other, saying, over the next week, I will do X, Y, or Z with my family history. And then we kind of feel morally compounded. What's the word? Anyway, we feel like we really, really have to do it. Otherwise, we're going to be embarrassed. So I've been pledging that I'm going to file up all the paperwork that I haven't filed up for too many years. And this lovely reader got in touch, and he's called Nick, and he has made a pledge that he's going to find out about his First World War ancestors. And he has a family story that six brothers all served in the First World War. Fortunately, they all survived. One of them is his direct ancestor. He's researched three of them, and he's pledging he's going to search all six.
Nice.
It's really nice, isn't it?
That's like quite a cool time. The fact that they survived as well makes it nicer. It's
nicer and harder.
Yes, I guess so. Good challenge. Anyway, great pledge.
Really great pledge. So if anybody else has a pledge that they'd like to make, just email editorial@family-tree.co.uk, and then we can read it out on the podcast, and then we can check in with you to kind of encourage you. No, not threatening behaviour at all, just gentle encouragement.
A nudge in the right direction.
And yes, exactly that. Yeah, yeah. So shall I tell you a little bit about my filing up that's been going on?
Yes, please do, because this is your big pledge, isn't it? Or 50% of it.
Yes, this is, well, we won't talk about the other half because that's not started yet. But the part I am doing is the filing up. And I think it's like any of those jobs. You know, when you have a job that you've been meaning to do for ages and it seems really daunting and you just can't quite make a start on it. And since I've made a start on filing up my documents, it's coming along so much more quick and easy than what I thought. And I'm soon going to have that little folder finished. And so what it was a folder of documents I say downloaded from wherever I'd found them online, put them in a folder called To Be Added to Family Tree Maker. And then I just needed to add them into my Family Tree Maker, transcribe out the details and everything else. And it's quicker and easier than I thought. I think I've got to remember that, not to get too daunted by things.
Yeah, it's so easily done as well, isn't it? I mean, I dare say me looking at DNA is probably an example of that. It's like you just build something up in your head like, oh, I can't do this. It's too much. It's too daunting. It's too big a task. But breaking it down into digestible chunks just helps. Like you're saying, I'm going to do one bit of research and then do this as well every single time. It's just going to eat away at it. It's just good.
I haven't started the other bit of my project, I haven't started yet, because that, you know, some jobs in family history, you do need to set aside some focused time. And so to get this project started, I need some focused time. So I'm going to do that this weekend and really kind of set out a mind map of everything I need to accomplish with lots of goals and little sub-goals. And then I'll have made it into a dippable, innable project, which is what I need. And I think you need that as well, don't you, Nathan? Because we're, like most people, we're really busy. So we need to make it so that sometimes you have the luxury of doing big chunks of family history. Sometimes you might only have half an hour. We're just snatching little tiny bits of time. Is that how you work?
It is now. As I've mentioned the last couple of times we've spoken, doing a written list has really helped me, or a written timeline. And pulling the census in, that has really focused me, not necessarily on doing research I want to do, but doing research that fleshes out my tree more and helps me more and has actually got me further back, but it doesn't feel like I'm trying, or like you were just saying, it's a big daunting task. I look at my tree and I'm like, I don't know which person to pick next. Now it's just like, pick one person and then let it expand whichever way I want from doing my list of who are they, where are they in the census, and then it's all the people that connect to them. It just suddenly, I don't know, something's clicked with me and I find that easier. And then it doesn't feel like I'm going down rabbit holes too quickly. I can quite happily do these lists. And if I find rabbit holes, I'll make a note and circle them, say, research this, research that, research this. And I'm just trying to fill the blanks in. And it feels like, it sounds boring to say it out loud, but like a tick box exercise where I'm like, yeah, tick, found them here, tick, found them here, tick, found them here. And then the gaps, they can be my rabbit holes and I can try and not obsess about them, apart from obviously Mary Ann Taylor. But the rest of them, it's just helping me do more quicker. And I don't feel like I'm a rabbit in the headlight. I don't feel freaked out about everything. And I'm actually I am craving a rabbit hole now to sort of just lose myself in, because I'm making progress up, down, left and right, not just backwards. And so, yeah, the number of people on my tree is growing. So that's cool. But like when we did our attempted research session to try and find Mary Ann Pickering on the 1891, as we've just said,
Mary Ann Pickering's my person.
Oh my God.
Yes. What are we, oh, Marianne's, they're a nightmare, aren't they?
Can we just stop with the Marianne's? I've got about five on my tree. Okay, sorry, yes. Marianne Taylor Briggs Wood. Anyway, we looked at the brothers, and when we were doing that session, I really just wanted to go and carry on researching their families, because they just kept appearing, didn't they, in little bits and bats. And I was like, right, no rabbit holes. Well, you kept saying to us, no rabbit holes, we're focusing on this, no rabbit holes. But I naturally now just want to focus on those guys. But I shouldn't do, but I should do. Anyway.
It's really interesting to hear how methodical you are, and also how calm that makes you. And I think that's a really important thing, because like our family history can be, I literally think it can be like a mindful exercise. It's, you know, if you're a stressed out person, having family history, you don't have to be a stressed out person, but if you are stressed, then when I do family history, I find it super calms me down. Just, it literally makes me calm and orderly, and I just concentrate on it. It's really absorbing. Stops my big worries.
I don't know if I've said it before, but it reminds me of like a puzzle book. There's some logic puzzles. I can't remember what they're called. And it'll say like, Joan plays a trumpet at 3 o'clock in the barn. And you've got like a tick box thing where you've got to try and match who is doing what in what room at what time. And you tick one, you cross bits out, and then you've got like five clues. Mm-hmm. And the clues don't give you the answer, but they let you eliminate other bits. Mm-hmm. Logic puzzles. I can't remember what they're called.
That sounds just like family history.
And that's what it is. As a kid, I used to love doing those. So when I'm now doing this census list and timeline thing, it feels like I'm doing a puzzle book. So it is quite just calming and like, right, what do I need to figure out next? And it's just really enjoyable. But the only side of it of that now is when I'm focused like that, it stops me getting excited about smaller details, which, this is weird, but old me wasn't interested in the details. Like I've said before, you've changed me. I'm now finding like jobs and locations and a rogue lodger and stuff like that that I thought I wasn't bothered about. It's now, they're the stories that I want to search for. So when I'm being logical, they don't grab me as much, but it's good because it gets them down on paper. And then, like I say, I can make this note. It's like, oh, hello, this is interesting. And going back to like Job Taylor, do I want to rant about him now? Yeah, go on, I'll rant about him now. He is Mary Ann Taylor Briggs Wood, her brother. And I don't know if you remember ages ago when we had Matt on, he was talking about his family's been miners. And I was like, oh, I want a miner. Well, Job was a miner. And Mary Ann Taylor's mum's dad, he was a miner too. So I found two miners in the same family. So I'm like, oh, there could be some interest there. I could do a bit more research on that.
Definitely.
I've not touched on it. I don't know anything about it or how to research it. But that seems interesting. That
is so interesting. You've got to do that. So you need to find out which mines were nearby. And this is awful, but there obviously were mining accidents. So you need to find out if there's any mining accidents.
Right. That sounds horrendous.
It is horrendous, but it's one of those social insight things, isn't it? It's the people who are mining for coal, which is powering British industry, you know, at the height of the Industrial Revolution and everything.
Yeah, and it's the chance to put somebody in a time and a place, isn't it?
But also, you can go and visit there's some amazing coal mining museums, aren't there? So like there's Big Pit. You can visit that, and some of them, they can let you go underground. Are you a kind of claustrophobic person?
Only if I think about it too much. I have been to the Yorkshire Coal Mining Museum, but many, many years ago. So who knows? Maybe I'm going to have to go back with my ancestral head on.
Yeah, you see it in a whole different light.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've also found out about Job that he later in life became a pub landlord. And actually, on Ancestry, I came up, there was like transfer of deeds and stuff to do with the pub, which, again, it's a new interesting document that I'd not seen. So he bought the license for a pub with two other people. Mm. And it was called the Fleece Inn, and it was in Mountain, which keeps coming up. It's a little village in near...
Is the pub still there?
Well, that's what I was wondering. I was like, oh, I could go have a pint in this pub.
Oh, wonderful. Yes.
I've not researched it deeply. Like I said, I was in fact gathering mud at that point. So, yes. But I've circled it as something to look into and maybe go for a pint. So,
yes. Cool. It's really cool hearing all the different, the way you kind of label up all your different modes. So you're saying you're in fast gathering mode, you're in logical mode. And one day, this is a bit like, there's a few things we always talk about in our episodes, like research logs is something that always comes up. Sophie Kay comes up pretty often. And she talks about the different, using the different kind of parts of your brain, like the creative parts of your brain and the logical, analytical parts of your brain. And family history is, maybe that's why it's so appealing to so many people and we don't get bored of it, because you can deal with it. It has, there's not a wrong way. Like, you kind of need to use a mixture of all these different parts. So it's captivating on many levels, isn't it?
Yeah. And like early on, I think I felt, I want to say like a pressure, like the pressure came from myself to do it, but it was fear as well. It's like, oh my God, I don't know what to do. I don't know where to go. There's so much out there. And it's just that ability just to focus, isn't it? That really just helped me and stops me being this like excitable, crazy guy. Because I do get quite excitable about like the thrill of the chase and finding new things. It's really thrilling. But it's just that it's suppressing that urge a little bit sometimes to actually say, right, can I get the details first? And then I'll let myself be excited about it. I've definitely changed. I am a very changed person.
And there's different sorts of chases we can do. Like, sometimes we're literally building our branches, aren't we? We're gathering new people to put on our tree. And if we are kind of still in the Victorian period, it can feel like you're using the same documents over and over again, like the census, birth, marriage and death records over and over and over again, with maybe some newspapers woven into that. And then other times we can have the thrill of the chase that we've drilled down and we're just obsessed about learning about one person's working life, or, you know, one person's childhood or whatever it is. What was a home like in a particular period of time? Like, you know, what sort of furniture did they have? What did they eat? How did they get their stuff? Yeah,
that's a lot.
It is, but it's that's still really absorbing. Like, I keep trying to find, I've got lots of ancestors who love sewing and I love sewing. And so I do always love trying to kind of flesh out that little bit of their lives. And I've spent ages trying to find out, you know, how people got their threads before there were the big thread companies. You could buy formal threads for doing your sewing, because everyone's hand sewing their clothes, not everyone, but most people are hand sewing their clothes, aren't they, at home? And it's like just that evolving picture. So before you could go to the haberdasher and get your threads, where did you get your threads from? It's been quite bugging me. Mm-hmm. So apparently it was from like markets and people hawking and things like that. I just don't feel satisfied I've got a concrete enough answer, but it's a little micro rabbit hole.
That's a really, really minuscule detail that you're searching for there. That's the way you search just baffles me sometimes. Like, not, I don't mean that in a negative way, but you're so like into the history and the culture and their lives. Like, that is like, oh, which shop did they go to for their apples?
But the thing is, what changed me is, I've done had family history for a while, and when you first start doing it, then, or even at any stage, you can feel like you found out a lot. But it's when I'll be really excited and I'll be trying to tell my family, so either my mum or dad or my siblings or my children, about something I found out, and then they'll ask me questions and it'll make me realise that I don't really know what their lives were like, and I don't really have a full understanding. I can't paint a picture for them of what these people's lives were like. So that's made me want to find out and not give them like an airy, well, things were different in the past, but they lived at number 39, because my family want to know what number 39 was like. Yeah, they want all the details. So I'm like, okay, I'll find it out. Yeah, which I shouldn't. It doesn't make me panic. I actually love finding it out, so it's no problem. But that's I find that a really cool thing as well, because maybe my family have a kind of fanciful storytelling mind, but they all, whether they're people, any generation, we all like the stories, yeah? Mm. And they like to be told a story, so a factual story. They don't want a made-up story with lots of surmise and twisted truths in it. They want a true story, so something based in fact. But they do like to have a picture painted for them.
I love it. It just seems really involved. I just can't see myself getting to that level.
Iron welding. You will.
your like historical knowledge and social context and stuff is just brilliant though. Like I'll say I'm searching for so and so in this year, and to me it's just a year, and you're like, oh yeah, this is happening and that was happening and they could possibly have this happened to them. It's like, wow, yeah, you've suddenly changed that name and that date into actually a fleshed out real person who is living and trying to survive in a certain situation. It's brilliant.
Well, my knowledge isn't brilliant, but thank you. But I do think it really adds to our story, adds to our understanding, doesn't it?
It really does.
I found out in the course of doing my filing up my records, then I did do one little thing which I can't believe I've done this before. So I added my grandfather's birth certificate to Family Tree Maker. So you know all those rules, start with yourself and work methodically backwards in time, adding records for each person as you go so that you know you've got it all correct. Okay, so clearly I have not done this, because otherwise I would have added my grandfather's birth certificate to Family Tree Maker a long time ago. But anyway, I added it to Family Tree Maker just recently, and I was intrigued because I noticed there were two different addresses on there, which means that he was born at one address, but he had his home address. So this is really cool to me, because he was born in 1920. And so we're seeing that, you know, the changeover of people not always being born at home, people more and more, and you get them in the Victorian period as well, like the lying in hospitals, so, or maternity hospitals. So he was obviously born in some sort of maternity unit of some kind. So I found the address, and it's 24 Marmaduke Street in Liverpool. And I'm now trying to find out about that maternity hospital. I found out it's now Student Dakes, but...
Oh, heck.
Yes.
And of course you're trying to find out about it.
I've got to find out what it was like being born there in 1920. So I will do that. It's just a tiny rabbit hole, but I think that's one of the things that... So I've got two adult daughters, so they're interested in babies, and they will they'll be interested in where their great-grandpa got born roughly a century ago.
Plus, maybe I'm getting there, because I like drinking, so I'm interested in pubs, so... Go to visit this pub. That'd be interesting.
And, I mean, people always talk about, don't they, how beer's got stronger and stronger. And wine has as well, hasn't it? Even in our drinking lifetime. Yes?
I can't remember.
I can remember. I've been drinking for so long. I can remember when wine used to be like 9%. And now loads of bottles of wine are 14%. It's like, right, what's going on there?
Tolerance.
As a student, I now sound like I'm actually Victorian, but when I was a student, wine would be like 9%. Now it's cider can be 7%.
Yeah, I know. Well, we've all got a lot to forget about, don't we?
Mm.
But anyway, we've got family history to distract us from anything that's too depressing.
Yes.
Just quickly, we had another person get in touch asking where the tree rating was on Ancestry.
Oh, tree ratings. You love talking about this, don't you?
I do, yeah. So just to clarify, in case anyone did want to know, it's fairly straightforward. You click on your tree when you're in Ancestry, and you click on your tree name, and then it should just appear at the top of your tree. But the only reason I'm mentioning this is because if people are looking for it and can't find it, it might be they don't have enough people in their tree yet. Because I think you need over 100 people in your tree before it appears.
Really interesting. I didn't know that.
I might be wrong, but mine didn't appear for a while, and then suddenly it was there, and obviously now I'm a monster for it. Did I mention them at 9.8? Anyway, well.
Goodness, you're such a show-off. She says bitterly, no, you didn't. Well done, Nathan.
Well done, mate. What a waste of time.
I'm still languishing in the eights. I'm just being all nonchalant, and I can't remember what point I am. I can look it up. Shall I quickly look it up? Roughly eight in the middle of the eights.
It doesn't really matter what it is, though, does it? It's as long as you're enjoying yourself.
No, it doesn't matter. But it's the, as far as I can understand from what you're doing, to get your tree rating higher, you're having to add more and more sources. So it has actually, it's a really good thing from that perspective, isn't it? To make people's trees be more verified.
If I get to my tree and I'm at a loss for what to do, I can click tree rating and it gives me people to look at to flesh out. So then... I'm like, right, okay, I'm going to spend half an hour, which I never do. It always ends up being a lot more. But it gives me a quick job as opposed to going to my research log or looking at my notes. I can just be like, oh, quickly, I'll dip in and do this and then progress something along. So, yeah, I guess it is useful in that way. But it's not the be-all and end-all, is it? He tells himself looking for 9.9.
I think I love the way you're using it. I think it's good. And And also, it is nice sometimes to have somebody else take charge. So by you going to that list and then suggesting where you might want to look, if you're tired and you're just going, all sorts to do, a bit of family history to relax, you can just kind of follow through that list and analyze it and see whether you think it's accurate and add it to your tree.
Yeah, it's like a no pressure thing. It's a bit like your filing system, what you're saying. You're testing the documents that you've got and just adding them back into the tree and solidifying it a bit more. It's not, I'm looking for this, I've been looking for that, and I'm really stressed and I don't know what it is. It's more like, oh yeah, Marianne's on this one. Click. Stop talking about Marianne.
Nathan, should we do our kind of mini pledges for what we're going to do over the coming week?
Let's. Okay, so I am not going to look any further at Marianne, Taylor Briggswood, or that line. I'm going to focus on the McKays, which I've prattled on about for a long time, but they're my relation to get out of Pudsey and get to Scotland. So I'm going to try and flesh them out as much as I can, probably using my same census method, and see how far I can get back in ancestry and see how much I can spread them out. And then hopefully we can have a go at Scotland's people, was it you said?
Mm-hmm.
And actually, yeah, get out of ancestry and look at some different documents and just like get through that.
Brilliant. So what we could do is next time we could have a look at Scotland's people, and you're going to need to buy some credits on Scotland's people, but it's not a subscription site. So you can just buy some credits and then they can sit there and you can spend as long as you like using them. Because you'd have been on Ancestry, you'll have got lots of census transcripts, hopefully, about your McKays. And then you can go and get the actual lovely old digitized document version of it on Scotland's people. Yeah.
Okay, cool. And you can take me through that.
Yes, that'd be fun.
Live session.
Yes.
With positive results.
Yes. Hopefully. No promises. No wild, over-optimistic promises. But we'll be doing our best to do constructive, successful research.
Well, that's cool, because that's going to be like a new thing for me. I've obviously barely left Ancestry at all. So scary world when I'm not in Ancestry.
Mm. You'll find it's much, the site's much simpler, Scotland's people.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
So I am going to do my big Marianne Pickering project mind map. And I'm going to put it on an Excel sheet. I've got it, visualized it already. It's gorgeous. It's absolutely gorgeous. I'm going to have to show you next week. So that will take me a few hours just to pull together the plan probably and assess what I already know and what I've already looked at, and then be like, right, this is happening. So I'm excited about that. So I'm going to do that. I would love to say I'm going to finish my filing this week. I would really like to be shot of it, but I think that might be a bit ambitious.
I think you've gone great guns if you think you're going to finish it. Because
I'm going to do more on it. I'm going to do more.
Because you had 101 documents last time and then it dropped to about 80. So if you think you're getting close to finishing, that's amazing.
I just like the idea of finishing. I don't think I am actually getting close to finishing. Right. So I'm just going to continue to work on that. But I am going to make a start on the Marianne thing. Otherwise, and this weekend's a really good weekend. I've got time to have a nice, big, chunky research session. So that's good.
I think the listeners deserve to find out more about Marianne Pickering as well, because we keep name dropping her, don't we?
I know. This is just to be called the Marianne podcast. We could talk about anything as long as the topic includes Marianne.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And if anyone else has a pledge, then please do send it in to us, as I say, at editorial@family-tree.co.uk. And we'd be really fascinated to hear. Good luck, Nick, with your World War One pledge as well. That sounds as though it's going to be really, really interesting. And if anybody'd like to keep up with other Family Tree news, then you can sign up to our Family Tree e-newsletter, which is family-tree.co.uk/newsletter-sign-up. It's free. It comes out at least once a week on a Monday. It's extremely interesting. We provide an in-depth guide to a really cool topic each week. So one week we might do surnames, another week it will be DNA, another week it might be old occupations, always something cool and juicy and essential to good family history research. And then another thing, we have talked a lot about Sophie Kate's because we are massive Sophie Kate fans, and she's doing a course for Family Tree at the end of September. Starts on the 23rd of September, and it's all about becoming a fabulous organized researcher. So who doesn't want to do that? It's a 3-week course. It costs £60 if you're not a member of Family Tree Plus or a subscriber to Family Tree, and it costs £50 otherwise. So yeah, over 3 weeks, you have three in-depth sessions. You have a webinar, and then we all meet up for a meeting afterwards where we discuss how we're getting on with the tips and tactics that Sophie's taught. It is so fun. We've done that before with her, and it's just brilliant. And she is not just like learn about it in theory. She'll tell us you to get hands-on with our research. We get hands-on with it. And from week one, if you're not already using a research log or you feel that you could be using one better, then she will set you up with some to-dos and you'll be doing it. So you'll have that 21-day magic habit thing. By the end, you'll be a super research log user. That easy, hey?
Sounds good to me. I might have to tag onto that one.
You definitely need to be there.
If you're not there, I'll
be WhatsApping you going, Nathan, stop running and get on the Zoom now.
I'm always keen to like, I do like my research log, but I'm pretty sure if I sit and analyze it, it's just chaos. It's just like my mind splurged out on the page. So it would be good to get some good techniques to make it a bit more practical and a bit more useful.
Definitely. Okay, see you then soon.
See you later.